Christy Dondero, her name came to me by a mutual friend, Erin Owen, who's our registration gal. They go to church together at Restoration Anglican Church in Arlington, and Erin has spoken very highly of you. So, it was probably a month ago or so, I met Christy for lunch on Capitol Hill, where she lives, and within minutes, I understood why. She was special to you. Christy's lived in D.C. for 6 years, though she grew up in Texas. She went to college at North Carolina State University, worked for Habitat Humanity, and was a consultant with PricewaterhouseCoopers. But for the past 4 years, she's worked at Rock Recovery. She served as a volunteer, a board president, the director of development and community programs, and is now currently the executive director of Rock Recovery. And to give you a little information about that, which I think is helpful, Rock Recovery is a Christian organization dedicated to bridging eating disorder treatment gaps. The concept was born out of the need for affordable and accessible recovery options for people struggling with disordered eating. People who needed more than a weekly therapy session, but according to insurance companies, weren't sick enough to get coverage for something more. Since 2009, Rock Recovery has been helping people overcome disordered eating. I'm getting emotional. Their holistic and affordable outpatient recovery program successfully helps adult men and women by providing group meals, psychotherapy, mentor matching, individual goal setting, and optional Christian support. It's a Christian organization, and they don't hide that. Having gone through recovery herself, Christy understands the depth of emotional, physical, and spiritual support needed to recover and is passionate about spreading the message that freedom from disordered eating is possible. Recently, she's fallen in love with the spin classes, as well as someone else, but spin classes, and in her spare time, she enjoys traveling, ballet, activities with her church, and visiting her family in Florida. And most recently, wedding planning. Little do you know, she's getting married in 3 weeks, and she decided to carve out time to hang out with us. So please join me in welcoming Christy.
Thank you.
Look at that. So fancy.
I think.
We did it. Thank you. Thanks, Tyler, for the introduction. Make sure we're working.
We're working.
Okay. I'm very impressed by Tyler and all of her technical giftedness that I've got to witness tonight. It's like there's always something, you know, and so many things with technology work against us, I found. But I'm Christy Dondero. Like she said, I'm the director of Rock Recovery, a local nonprofit. I'll give you a little bit more of our spiel because I just always joke when you give me a microphone and ask me what I do for a living, I will tell you all about it because I love this organization. I love speaking about freedom from disordered eating. Like Tyler said, I'm actually personally recovered, and for so long, I didn't even realize what I was struggling with, let alone that something called freedom was possible. And so I really love just getting a chance to share my story, educate people, and also really equip people how to raise healthy children and keep ourselves healthy and balanced as well. And I've always heard the phrase, you know, speak out of your scars, not out of your wounds. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. And I know for me, you know, I have scars, but they're no longer gaping holes that are wounds. They're really healed over. So I hope from all the good things that God has done in me through my recovery, hopefully that will bring some encouragement to all of you. Regardless of if you've ever struggled with body image or food or anything else, I think there's still goodness to be found. So tonight, we're going to talk about a lot of things. And I do talk fast, so if I go too fast, just like wildly wave your arms at me because I can get on a bit of a tangent. But we're going to talk about what is body image? Why does it matter? What does God say about our bodies? What does culture do to our body image and to our ideals of the perfect body? What about body image and self-acceptance, and how do we find it, and how do our children find it? And then knowledge is power. So what's the prevalence like? What are we dealing with? What are statistics? And then how do we actually look for signs in someone who's struggling so we can intervene appropriately? And then basically we'll end with how should I eat? And I love that we're actually eating a meal, and I'm sorry I can't be eating it with you. It looks delicious, and I'm really sad actually. But it's wonderful to see a good, balanced, normal meal. And we'll talk a little bit at the end about how should I eat, why diets are the worst, don't go on diets, and mindful and intuitive eating principles. And then we'll leave some time at the end for a Q&A as well. So if you have questions, you're welcome to ask me at the end. So Rock Recovery, our mission is to support the journey to freedom from disordered eating. And so this means a couple different things. We say the journey because, you know, life's a journey. So is body image acceptance, so is, you know, eating and all of the rest. And so within that, we like to think of our lives as part of this journey. And the biggest piece here that stands out to me is the idea of freedom. Again, I said I am recovered from an eating disorder, and just I know what it is to live enslaved to an idea of what I think I should look like, what I should eat, if I'm bad for eating this, good for eating this. And I know what it is to be freed from those chains and just able to fully live Christ, love Christ and live life. So we are helping people on the journey to freedom, and we can't fix people, unfortunately, don't trust me, I've tried, but we can support people on their journey, and we do believe that that freedom is possible and lifelong. So I'll talk a bit about that. And it was interesting, as I was reflecting and coming here tonight, I was thinking through, you know, I love talking about this, but I am getting married in 3 weeks. And so I was like, what new insights has the Lord given me over the last couple of months? I got engaged on December 28th, getting married April 8th. Be impressed with our speediness of planning. It's been horrible, but really good. Everyone who's not a believer is like, are you pregnant? And I'm like, I'm not pregnant. My sister is. So that's why we're speeding it up. So I'll have another little niece soon, which I'm really excited about. So, you know, I've been thinking through. January hit, and I was not only recently engaged, but also it was New Year's resolutions, right? So the topic of this talk is a new resolution, and it kind of feeds into the idea that we're bombarded with all of these things. And of course, come January, everyone's like, God forbid you ate a cookie over Christmas. How will you ever forgive yourself? Now it's time to go on the treadmill and lose X amount of pounds and feel bad about yourself for the next 3 months until you fail and eventually give up, right? So not only was I getting all those dieting messages, I was also getting the be a better bride, lose 10 pounds, fit into this, eat this, not that. And I was just like, what world do we live in? Like, I don't need to be focusing on my body right now. I need to be focusing on my ability to actually forgive someone, listen to somebody, and not always yell at them. So, like, there are bigger fish to fry than losing 5 pounds from my wedding dress. I need to figure out how to actually communicate and listen and not be so controlling. So, you know, and I don't know, you can ask Ryan if I've actually accomplished any of that, but I was just really struck by the idea of, gosh, there are all these things I can busy myself with, all these things that can distract me from a worthwhile pursuit and worthwhile activity. And so diets are just one of those things that can keep us busy and distracted from the things that really matter, like working on our hearts, loving our neighbor, and doing the important things that we're called to do daily. So a lot of this talk will talk a little bit about all of those things and how it fits in. But I really do believe that we're called to something more. And this idea that we should be fixated on a diet or a certain weight or a certain size is just such a lie. And I really do also believe that the devil uses that to keep us busy and to keep us from the lives we're called to live. So tonight, we're going to talk about all the ways we can live the life we're supposed to be living. And one of those things is our body image. So, you know, bodies matter. You read the Bible and it gets really confusing because you're like, bodies are evil, flesh is evil, we don't know what to do, here's the spirit, everything else. But at the end of the day, in this life, in this world, we have bodies, and we do know that bodies matter. And so our body image also matters as well. And body image, you know, you might think, oh, body image is what I look like. But body image is actually not just what we look like, body image is what we think we look like. And so it's a subjective picture or mental image of one's own body. And I like to always explain this to people with a quick story from my own recovery process. I'll kind of interject personal experience throughout the talk because I think my story is kind of interesting. And it always helps to have some illustration, I think, to help make a point. But I remember there was one day, I was probably 6 months into my recovery process. I was in my early to mid-20s. And I was thinking, I woke up that morning, and I've been working with my psychologist on body image. And so I was allowed to look in the mirror, but not look too long, not critique myself. And I remember I had a mirror in my foyer when I walked out the door. And so I was walking out the door to go to work, and I looked in the mirror, and I thought, I look good today. My hair looks good. I like my outfit. I feel confident and ready to face this day. And I walked outside, drove the 10 minutes to work, got in the office. I think I got some email of rejection, which is just the life you sign up for when you're a fundraiser. So I was doing fundraising at the time for Habitat for Humanity, and I got some email and felt rejected and felt, ugh, I'm not good enough, felt ashamed. I remember going to the bathroom at work and looking in the mirror and thinking, I look hideous today. Like, oh my gosh, I look fat in these jeans. What am I wearing? What was I thinking? And in that moment, it came alive to me, the idea that body image is not what we look like, it's what we think we look like, because nothing had changed. I mean, it had been like an hour. Like, even my makeup hadn't started to run yet. It had not been that long. Like, literally nothing of my body or my appearance had changed in that hour. But something in my mind had. And the belief that I wasn't good enough, that I was failing, that I wasn't working hard enough, that I could do better, that people were better than me, all those things came into my head. And so I turned inward and started attacking my appearance and attacking my body. And that was the first time I was like, oh, there is something to heal here. Like, this isn't just what I look like. It's something more. And so I tell that story because you look at these three little mirrors here, and same person looking in the mirror, and there's three different ways that she can be reflected. And it's very much part of our own internal state. So there's negative body image and there's positive body image. And so often when we have negative body images, we feel not good enough, we feel ashamed, we feel, you know, whatever it might be, fat or unattractive or all these words that are negative words here on the left. And then the positive body image side is where we actually see ourselves in a positive light. And so we know here, it says the scale can only give you a numerical reflection of your relationship with gravity. That's it. It can't measure beauty, talent, purpose, life worth, possibility, strength, or love. And that's just true. Like, how often do we worship our scales? Do we get up in the morning, hit the little on button, wait for the three zeros, and step on and think, okay, if it's below this number, it's a good day. If it's above this number, it's a bad day, right? How many of us have done that? Yeah, right? So many times. And that number means nothing, right? Like, it can actually physically change based on what you ate the night before, where you are in your monthly cycle. There are so many things that can change that number. And why are we assigning so much worth to this number on the scale? Why is our whole day going to be ruined if it says one thing versus another? And so the good news is our body image, our mentality does not have to revolve around the scale or a number. It can revolve around our creator. So this is our guiding principle. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. And this is so important for body image and so important for our daily lives as well. We need to guard our hearts, especially against the culture. So you look at this slide, and it's really fascinating to think about what society dictates we're supposed to look like, right? Like, it's changed over time, and even in the last 5 or 10 years, I feel like I'm seeing all this strong is the new skinny, or, you know, Kim Kardashian, get this butt, or do whatever, and even in the last few years, it's shifted, but there's a huge shift here between what was attractive and what was deemed ideal. And so, of course, you know, you get to Barbie, Marilyn Monroe, Lillian Russell, and, you know, this original goddess over here on the left. And it's shifted. It's changed. So why are we suddenly enslaved to what the culture tells us we're supposed to look like? When it shifts, there's no truth. There's no actual ideal. So there are some cultural reflections of what our current ideal is, and this is just some statistics for you. The average American woman's 5'4 and about 140 pounds. The average American model is 5'11 and 117 pounds. And again, those weights don't actually matter, but just to kind of show you the insane difference between what's telling us we should look like and what we actually probably do look like. If Barbie were actually life-size, she couldn't actually function. She wouldn't be able to have bones or organs, because who needs those? I mean, half a liver, you know, we could go on just fine without that. And the problem is, you know, all these magazines we're reading, all these things we're being told, all the things we're hearing every day from our friends, from advertisements, they're making us so afraid of being fat, and that doesn't end with us. It also impacts our children. And so this is a statistic that really always frightens me, and I'll share a couple more later, is that 81% of 10-year-olds are afraid of being fat. How are 10-year-olds even aware what fat is, right? Like, how are they actually afraid of it? So one reason why, perhaps, is because we have this advertising world that we're living in. So I get just a kick out of this. I don't know why I think it's so funny. But, I mean, how hard is it to slice an orange, you guys? How can we ever do it? You know, you look at advertising, and so often they make something look so hard. Like, you can't even slice an orange. You are a failure. You must immediately buy this product or else you're never going to be good enough. Right? And so that's what we're looking at all the time. There's all these tactics, all these things that people are coming at us because advertising so often wants to make us feel bad about ourselves because they want to trigger a choice. They want to trigger us to buy their product. So all of these things are actually getting at our emotions and making us feel not good enough and making us feel like if we don't have this product, we're not going to be okay. And that happens with products. So it happens a lot with new moms, which I see all of the time, the shame that happens to poor parents. I mean, birth seems hard enough. I haven't had to do it yet, but I'm like, come on, once you make it through that, shouldn't people be nice to you and just give you an easy time, like feed you bonbons, call it a day, not shame you for how you're going to raise your children. And so, you know, but people really do want to make a profit. And so we have to remember this when we're looking at advertising, when we're reading the news, when we're looking at anything on TV. People really want us to make choices so that they can make some money off of us. And so remember what someone is probably trying to make you feel when you're watching these things. And of course, there's the Photoshop magic. So this top picture is a little dark, so I apologize. But basically, we know the Dove Real Beauty campaign. Have y'all seen that? Good stuff, right? I mean, it's always so eye-opening to me to see some of their work. But Photoshop is real, and so often the people that we're actually seeing on billboards or in ads aren't actually real humans. They're a real human turned into some kind of weird robot human that's been airbrushed and changed and shaped really differently. And so that's just what's happening. So we have to remember, look at these before pictures, the 1, 2, 3, 4, that comes out a little bit more clearly. But you can just see here, I mean, between the first one on the top left and the second one on the bottom right, it's a whole different person. And that's makeup, that's so many other products being put in, and it's also Photoshop. So these are things to remember. And it's not just us that are seeing these images every day. It's also our kids. So culture is telling us all kinds of different things. But one thing that we know is that we're not just bodies. And so often I think the world tells us your body's what matters. And for me, for so long, my entire identity was about what I looked like. I started to develop an eating disorder around, I guess I'd say 13. It started to really get bad around 18, 19 when I went off to college, and I finally recovered about 24. So about 10 years, I really struggled with body image, disordered eating, diets, self-loathing, all kinds of really fun things, let me tell you. But what I think it was is for so long, I didn't know who I was. I actually came to faith through my recovery in my early 20s, which was a huge part of my own recovery story and figuring out what really mattered for me. But for so long, I had bought into this idea that my identity was my looks, and I was only going to be okay if I was accepted and told that I looked the right way, had the right things, was living the right life. And so that's really how my battle with disordered eating began. I was a ballerina, which did not help things. I love ballet and I wouldn't trade it for anything, but you know, from age 8, I was being poked and prodded and told to lose weight and do this, and you know, all in spandex in a full-length mirror with like 20 other people, which just seems like a cruel way to grow up in some ways. But I just had this idea that I had to look a certain way to be okay and to be enough. So it really rocked my world when in my early 20s, I was suddenly exposed to this idea that I didn't have to earn anything. I didn't have to look a certain way. God had created me the way I was meant to be, and I could actually rest in that. And so this body, soul, spirit connection is we're a whole person. You know, we're not just bodies. We are a body, soul, and spirit, and we have the Holy Spirit within us, and God has created us in His image. So the problem is, while we are created in God's image, while we have the Holy Spirit, we do experience disconnection. You know, there's the fall. And here we are, right, living in this fallen world, living in this broken world, and trying to figure out what to do with it. So there are all kinds of things that we're experiencing in our culture and in our communities that is disconnected and broken. So what often happens is we can look for our identity in worldly things and forget about what the Lord says about us. So I love this scripture from Romans. It was a huge part of my personal recovery, where it's Romans 12:2. Do not conform anymore to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and prove what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. And so the idea of don't let the culture dictate how we're going to live our lives, let God's word tell us that, and actually shift and change that ideal. And for me, that is what really kind of got me into the recovery process. I realized a couple of things. Like I said, I struggled from about 13 to 23. And along the way, I didn't mean to develop an eating disorder, right? Like, it's a bunch of really small, sneaky steps that kind of came together and got me on that path. But I will say the recovery process certainly involved a lot of steps, one of which was surrendering to the Lord and letting him kind of have total control over my life. And the other one was really taking captive my thoughts and changing my mind and really remembering this world will lie to us, and the only thing that's actually true is what the Lord tells me and what the Bible tells me. And so that's what I need to really be focusing on. So that's really what got me through and what can help get us through to daily life as well. Because so often, you know, we're not conforming to what God says is true. And what's the result of that? You know, I believed if I was over X amount of pounds, I wasn't good enough, I wasn't worthy, I would never find love, I would never be okay. And it was interesting, as I was reflecting for this talk and driving here today, there's a very long story to how my fiance and I got together, but it all started with a prayer. We've been friends for 6 years, and I actually have only started dating him since the summer, so it was a little fast. It really freaked my roommate out, but I think we're going to be okay. But I prayed. I remember in August, I went to a little mini day retreat, and I prayed for the Lord to surprise me and protect me. And hours later that day, Ryan confessed having a 3-year crush on me and saying he wanted to date me, and I was like, well, there's a surprise part. Great. God delivered real fast. And I kind of always thinking, I was like, well, Lord, what did you mean by the protected part? And, you know, we dated pretty quickly, got serious quickly, got engaged after just 4 months. And so I was reflecting after we got engaged about the idea of God's protection. And I noticed, I was like, oh, I think this might be part of this prayer. I weigh myself on occasion just because, you know, to check in for health and wellness. And we don't often recommend weighing yourself. So for about 8 years I did not weigh myself, but I noticed I was at the doctor or something, and I was like, wow, I think I'm actually at the heaviest weight I have ever been, and I found this man who I adore, who wants to marry me and thinks I'm just like the greatest, prettiest, most wonderful thing, at least for now. Give it time, right? But I was really struck where I was like, for so long, if you could have told my 18-year-old self, like, you're going to be this many pounds heavier and you're going to find true love, I would have been like, well, no, that's not possible. No one can love me until I'm this weight again. Like, how could anyone find me attractive unless I'm this weight or this size? Like, that is not possible. And I was just really struck, and I was like, hey, God, you're pretty sneaky. Thanks a lot. Like, I really have been protected, because as I was thinking through those New Year's Eve or those New Year's resolutions and the diet plans and the bridal magazines I was reading in January, I was like, I could have easily gotten sucked back into that, but I knew it didn't matter. I knew 10 pounds wouldn't change anything, and I knew there were so many deeper, better things to focus on. And I was just so grateful for the way that the Lord's protected me from that lie. And it kind of feels like one of the last pieces of healing for me is just that belief that, you know, we can be loved and that we can be accepted as we are without having to change. And it was just such a beautiful, oh, guys, I almost got a little teary. It's such a beautiful realization for me, and I'm like, Lord, you really did surprise me and protect me. And so, but for so long, you know, I was living in this place where I think I was just not protected and not free, you know, not in a healthy place, where I was experiencing guilt and shame. I was really competitive with people. And Mother Teresa has this beautiful, beautiful quote where she says, if you judge others, you have no time to love them. And I remember thinking, gosh, that's so true. If I'm sitting here comparing myself to other people or wanting to be a certain weight or wishing I was this or that, like, I'm not able to love the person in front of me. I'm turning myself into some sort of competitive monster. So the problem is, you know, we can get to a place where we're no longer listening to our bodies or our creator. We're fighting our bodies. And that was one of the things I realized in my recovery process when I really got down to the idea that I was created by the Lord. I was like, oh my gosh, if God created me and I'm sitting here saying my hips are wrong, my waist is wrong, my this is wrong, like, ah, that can't be good, right? I mean, if I'm really truly made in God's image, if I am beautiful because God made me in his image, and if the king is enthralled by my beauty, and I should honor him for he is my Lord, like, this is such a big deal, and what am I doing? Like, it really helped me kind of snap out of some of my body image issues. And the good news is that's a voice we don't need to critique. We should keep critiquing the voice of the world, but not the voice of our maker. So we could talk all night, and I'm breezing through a lot of material here, and I know that that's a lot, but I do want to go into a little bit about body image acceptance. So there's lots of things that can influence how we think we look, how we feel, and how we look, but how do we get to a place where we can actually accept ourselves. So I already said a little bit of this, but viewing ourselves as created, remembering we really truly are made in God's image, being observant rather than judgmental. I have to say, I kept joking with my therapist. I was like, you should probably be the maid of honor at my wedding, because I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be getting married if it wasn't for you. But she always helps me to remember this idea of, you know, having a thought is not the end of the world. Like, observe your thought, which always sounds so corny to me. I'm like, oh, I feel, you know, anxious right now. Isn't that interesting? I wonder why I feel anxious right now. And so versus being like, oh my gosh, I'm an anxious mess. I can never get anything done and I'm never going to be okay, right? But like distancing ourselves from our thoughts and our feelings can actually be very helpful in the moment. The other thing besides these two first points is building a wide base of self-esteem. So for me, when I think about that day when I went to work and suddenly thought I looked horrible when an hour earlier I actually thought I looked good, it was because I did not have this wide base of self-esteem. My whole worth was set on what I looked like and what I thought I looked like. So when something poked a hole in that and that started to crumble, I started to crumble because I didn't have this wide base. I had this very narrow base. So one thing we talk about doing a lot is building a wide base for self-esteem and actually remembering the good qualities about ourselves, that, you know, we are loved by others, we are created by the Lord, that there are so many good things that can help us build this wide base. We're not our achievements. We're not the grades we get. We're not the jobs we have. We're not the kids we produce. We are so much more, and we're children of God. So we have this wide base of self-esteem. And then the other thing is to create self-empathy, which sounds a little like corny, right? But we really can have some empathy for ourselves and to remember, would we say the things that we say to ourselves internally to our best friend? Is that something we would ever say out loud? So often, probably not. So we're going to do a little visualization exercise so you can take a break from listening to my voice. But I want you to just sit and close your eyes, and I'll do this with you. It's just going to take a couple seconds, I promise. It's not too scary. But I just want you to close your eyes and think of your very best friend. Think of your best friend in the whole world. If you have many, just pick one. No pressure. They won't know you didn't pick them or that you did pick them, so it's okay. So just picture your best friend, and I want you to think of three qualities about him or her, I assume it might be a her, but him or her, that you love about this best friend of yours. So think of your top three qualities for them. All right. Did you think about him? You can open your eyes again. All right. So how many of the qualities you listed about your best friend that you love were physical attributes? They got great legs, you know, really thin, flat abs, strong arms. Anybody? Yeah? No? Were they things like they're a great listener, they give great wisdom, they're great cooks? Give me some of your examples. What were some of the things you loved about your friends?
Makes you laugh.
Makes you laugh? Fun. Yeah?
Encouraging.
Yeah.
Smart.
Patient. Yeah. Yeah. Like a kindred person, right? Like they get you. Yeah. Yeah. So all the things we first thought about, right, were not these physical attributes. They were these really wonderful, important things. So why are the first three attributes, if we thought about ourselves and the things we didn't like or we did like, so often we're going to think about our bodies, right? Why? Guys, what a waste of time. It's so sad. So when we think about this, how would we talk to our best friends? Would we tell them that they looked too fat in that dress or that something else was going on? No. The self-talk we have with ourselves is actually very important, and we need to really remember that. Did we test the video? Can we try it? Okay, let's see. Oh, wait. Can I? Oh, there. All right. I can't make any promises, but let's see.
Okay. Girl, you can't be crying.
I know. All right.
Oh, sorry.
Woo. That was a doozy.
Let's see if I can hear it.
Just a reminder, I love you very much.
I love you too.
Can we turn it up at all?
When you smile, your face looks like a fat middle schooler.
Shopping with your body type will never be easy.
Everyone is skinnier and prettier than you.
I
People behind you are staring at the way your fat hangs over your bra.
You look so ugly in pictures that I can't even look at them anymore.
Face it. With that cellulite, you will never be able to wear white.
You won't be sexy unless you lose 10 more pounds.
You should never get pregnant because your nose is going to spread across your face. He would have never cheated if you were skinnier.
When your boyfriend says that you're hot, it's just him trying to make you feel better for gaining weight.
You will never be able to go sleeveless, not even on your wedding day.
You will be more successful if you lost 15 pounds.
He's going to leave you for someone skinnier.
You're not even worthy of him.
You should be disappointed in the way you look.
Why can't you look better?
Why don't you look like her? I'm sorry you feel that way. Our friendship started out very vulnerable, which I think that's how we got so close so fast. I knew a lot of the things about you, but I didn't know you had vocalized them to yourself so many times and on such deep levels.
When I watched you crying and I watched you, the pain that the words were bringing you, it's like, that is constant. That's literally 24/7 in my mind. That's like a thing that these, even since we did the video.
How many times have you watched it?
I couldn't even watch it the first time.
Really?
I can't watch it. Yeah. I can't look at myself. I hate how I look. Wow, I am hurting myself so much all the time. But
you just have to now pretend like you're talking to me.
Right.
Yeah. You always tell me my lipstick looks good.
Right.
And my butt looks good.
Yeah.
Even though I don't look
good. I just have to try to pretend like I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Get ready.
That's so real, isn't it? Oh, sorry, Tyler, I'll look at your email. There you go. Gosh, right? Isn't that powerful? I mean, having to actually read to your best friend things that you think about yourself, can you imagine doing that? And how painful that would be? There's one moment, I forget the woman's name, but when she hears what the woman says back at her, it's like she flinches, you know? And you're just seeing this really visceral, strong reaction. And why are we saying these things about ourselves? They would clearly never say it about each other, you know? And so I loved that ending message, talk to yourself like a best friend, right? How can we talk to ourselves like we're our own best friends? Because I would never say those things to my best friend. And luckily I won't say those things to myself anymore on my good days, right? But just, gosh, what a waste of energy, and what a lie. They're both beautiful. They're both so beautiful. And you guys are all so beautiful. And Bill, you're beautiful too. But you know, yeah, it's just such a different thing, right? So I just want to really remind you guys, like, our words have power. They really do matter. And even if we're just thinking it, our words still have power. They really do. They can speak life and they can speak death. So we need to be choosing to have our words speak life. So what do we do? I mean, you think about it. We've been living for how many years, how many decades with these thoughts ingrained in our brains. And the brain's interesting because in a lot of times it actually works for us. And a lot of times it feels like it works against us because our brain really does kind of create these grooves. When we start to have certain thoughts, it becomes easier and easier to have them. You know, the power of habit, right? There really is something powerful. So the fact that we probably had the habit of critiquing our bodies, thinking of these things, and do we really have the habit of thinking of positive things about our bodies or positive things about ourselves? If we had more time, I was going to make you be my guinea pigs. And there's this exercise that we do about body image acceptance, and you have to draw a picture of yourself, and artistry is not judged. It's just a stick figure is fine. But you have to write 9 things that you love about your body, and you're allowed to write 1 thing that you don't love about your body. And of course, everyone gets their paper and they're like, can we reverse it? Can I write 9 things I don't like and 1 thing that I do like? And I'm like, no, that's the point. And just the idea, it's so interesting because, you know, the idea is it's we could easily list them off, right? Like the things we want to change about our bodies, the things we don't like about our bodies. But we can't easily list off the things that we actually appreciate and like about our bodies. But by the end of the night and the end of the exercise, people have kind of flexed that new muscle and gotten a new groove. And what I love about it is people, of course, all look different, right? And so we'll get in a circle and share it, our responses from the exercise. And I love it because people all say, well, you know, I like my hair because it's like my mom's, or I like my hair because it looks like my sister's. And of course, there's a blonde, there's a brunette, there's someone with curly hair, someone with straight hair. And it reminds us, oh, we're allowed to be unique. We're allowed to look as we're created to look. We don't have to look a certain way, right? We don't have to fill a certain mold. And so it's a really beautiful exercise because it reminds us, not only are there things to love about our bodies, but we can all look different and all still be enough and all still be beautiful and all still be okay, you know? It shouldn't be this competition. We don't need to all look the same, or there's no ideal. It's just how we're created and taking care of ourselves and our bodies. And so some things that we can do to kind of start to flex that muscle is to distance ourselves from negative body image thoughts. So and one thing I'll say too before this is I challenge all of you, next time you're with a group of your girlfriends and someone starts saying, have you lost weight? Or, oh my gosh, like I wish I had your arms or your legs or whatever the thing is here. Stop them. That conversation, that talk is not helpful. People would tell me all the time, oh, you look great. Have you lost weight? And, you know, I was starving myself and people were telling me I looked great. And I have a friend who had cancer and people were like, wow, girl, you look great. Have you lost weight? And she's like, yeah, well, I have cancer, so I can't eat. So all the things that we say, all the comments we make about people's bodies can really be harmful. So just try to remind ourselves of that as we go through our lives. But next time you're in a group, because, you know, it's contagious, right? Like you're like, oh, well, you think this is bad about you. Wait till you've seen this. And after I had this kid and after that, and, you know, it's all changed. And no, like we have these great bodies that enable us to love our families and love our friends and be healthy and be active and be out into the world. So why can't we focus on that instead of the things that we think we should change about them? So just try to be the positive example and change those conversations. That's my challenge to you. So one of the tools here is called ACT and diffusion. And so this is kind of the thing I mentioned that sounds a little corny, but instead of thinking, ugh, I look so fat today, instead reframe and say, I notice that I am having the thought that I look fat today. And it sounds so silly, but even stepping out of your thought and challenging it for a moment can be really, really helpful to not get sucked into it and not spiral out of control. And so the idea is that to remind yourself that body image is subjective. You know, think about my story again, looking in the mirror an hour between myself and thinking I looked totally different. Body image is truly subjective and it's about so much more. And so just kind of remember, we do have some control over our thoughts. We can take them captive. We can actually start to reframe and retrain our brains. Letting go of judgment. So this is the whole non-judgmental, curious observer. And so be aware of our own judgments, whether it be about our bodies, the world, people, food, whatever it is. Like someone brings you a meal and you think, ugh, I can't eat that. That has X amount of calories or that's whatever. Kind of challenge that and think, huh, why do I possibly think that? Don't all foods fit into a healthy, balanced diet? Can I eat kale and cupcakes and still be a great human being, you know? Kale and cupcakes are actually my two favorite foods, so I think if I ever do an autobiography, I'm probably going to name it Kale and Cupcakes. But, you know, just kind of be aware of that. And then when you're aware that you are judging yourself, just stop it. Like, take a moment and stop it. And then try to create a newer, non-judgmental voice of like, huh, I wonder why I suddenly feel that way, or what has happened in the last 5 minutes to make me think this about myself? Did I get a phone call from my kid's teacher saying he did this at school today? Did I try on a pair of pants that doesn't fit me anymore? And try to really be aware of what is shifting your view. And then, oh, this sweet little picture. Create empathy for yourself. This picture, the first time I saw it, it was just so horrifying to me, but it's so true. I mean, in case you can't read it, it says, don't let her think like this. Like, imagine your three-year-old self. What would you say to three-year-old you, right? Have some compassion, have some empathy for yourself. How would you rephrase these words if you're talking to your three-year-old self or your best friend? And practice saying these kinder words to yourself. I don't know about you. I feel like I'm very, very perfectionistic and have a very hard time being positive, which I actually found has gotten me in trouble with gratitude which can get me in trouble with, you know, faith in the Lord, because I should probably be thankful for the things that God's doing in my life. But I think I'm afraid if I don't critique something, I'm going to suddenly, like, go off the wagon and go off the rails and go out of control. So I better stay vigilant, and I better stay aware, and I better keep being critical of myself, because who else is going to keep me from improving or keep me improving? And I found actually the opposite is really true. You know, we can really change when we start to actually accept ourselves. Acceptance is really what brings change. I used to think, oh, if I accept myself, I'll just stagnate. I'll just stay the same. I'll never make any progress. And it's so not true. If I accept myself, I finally can relax and exhale and slow my roll for a minute and start to actually move forward and make progress. And so this idea of being empathetic towards ourselves and to others is really helpful and important. So these are really long, and there's a lot of words here, but there's basically 10 steps to positive body image. I'm going to summarize them, but think about the things you like about yourself that aren't related to your appearance, and that are related to your appearance too, but think about yourself as a whole person again. Appreciate what our body can do. I had a really good friend who... he's actually a big donor of ours. He's a lovely man. And he, his daughter's best friend, had an eating disorder when they were in high school. And I remember when I told him about the work that I do, he was really supportive and passionate about it. And he said, it really struck him, because he said, of all the things on paper, you know, this kid who wound up developing anorexia was the perfect family, the perfect kid. Nothing should have been around that would actually have caused her to develop anorexia, right? He's like, and it really threw him for a loop to say, well, why her kid and not my kid? Why this and not that? And kind of realized, gosh, like, anyone can be impacted by any kind of disordered eating or any kind of illness. And it really scared him. And he did say one thing, that his daughter had always done sports that were not about aesthetics. They were about what your body can do. And just the idea that we can remember our bodies can do so much. Like, I love spin classes now. For years, I went to the gym as self-punishment or compensatory behavior. You know, I ate this, so I had to burn it off, or I was bad and I did this, or, you know, I had this last night, so I'm going to, you know, go out for this two-hour run or whatever else. But it was always punishment. And now I work out as enjoyment. It's not punishment. If I don't want to work out, I don't work out. But if I do go, I actually enjoy moving and working out my body. And I also enjoy fueling my body, whether it be cupcakes or kale, right? I like both, sometimes at the same time, oddly enough. It actually works. So just the idea that our body can do so much, and our bodies are not ornaments. You know, they're so much more. True beauty is not simply skin deep, so remember that as well. And then surround yourself with positive people. You know, it just as easy to spiral into a conversation where we're all bashing ourselves. It's also really good to be around people who are positive and accepting and encouraging. So remember to actually encourage yourselves and others. Shutting down voices, really and truly, I can let myself spin for so long in my head. It's been so funny to be engaged, because my fiance gets such a kick out of my thought process, because we'll be doing something and I'm like, oh, and did you call the caterer? And da-da-da-da. And he's like, our brains are so different. So different. He's like, I don't understand where your brain comes from. But, you know, our thoughts can go so quickly, and they can go just... they can come at us so fast. And remembering that we actually do have some control over them, and we can shut them down and stop them and redirect them. And sometimes actually it does help to clap. Something about for us, like if we have a sound that distracts us, if you catch yourself in the middle of a spiraling thought, just do this, and it might help shake you out of your spiraling thought. Another thing is to wear clothes that are comfortable and make you feel good about yourself. Why would we squeeze ourselves into clothes that aren't comfortable? I will say my wedding dress is a little tight. I don't know quite how I'm going to like walk for the day, but tight in a good way. Paying attention to advertising, media messages, all the things that we're seeing, and taking care of ourselves. I remember when I first started therapy for my eating disorder, my therapist was like, okay, great. What is one body part that you like about yourself? And at that time, all I could think about was my hands. I like my hands. They're all right, you know? And so my self-care was to go get a manicure that week and to do something to make myself feel good in my body and to start to kind of slowly work my way up from just my hands to my forearms to my elbows to my biceps, you know, and eventually be able to accept my whole body. But doing things that care for our bodies and ourselves is actually really important and really life-giving. And then this number 10 is such a good one, using the time and energy that we would have spent worrying about food, calories, weight, whatever, and putting it into something good and positive and encouraging. Think of how much we could do. The dieting industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and 98% of diets fail. So, think about this. Diets didn't come out just last year, right? Like, this industry has been going for decades and been creating billions of dollars for something that doesn't work. Look at Oprah buying Weight Watchers. We've seen her weight change and fluctuate over the years that we've come to love her, right? But, you know, diets don't work. And so we need to try something else. So this is just a little picture. It says, newsflash, this number does not determine your beauty or your worth, you're more. So we're going to go into a little bit of some statistics, signs to look for, and ways to help, and then we'll close out with some tips on eating. So prevalence. So this is just for women, ages 25 to 45, but 31% purge, 37% regularly skip meals to lose weight, and 39% have had concerns regarding eating or body image that interfere with their daily happiness. This is from a study Self Magazine did in 2008. Going down, 1 in 5 women, which is about 20% of the population, obviously, struggle with an eating disorder or disordered eating. And we use both terms. So, you know, an eating disorder is anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating. But we use the phrase disordered eating because there's this range, you know, and there's all kinds of ways that we can be healthier, be a little too rigid, or be a little too anything else. And so we use this term disordered because it doesn't have to be a cookie cutter eating disorder. There still can be some disordered behavior going on. So we kind of go back and forth for the language. Just don't get confused. And a lot of the population basically has an eating disorder. And then 50% of people who are seeking weight loss treatment are actually struggling with binge eating disorder, which is a psychological disease, right? So it's compulsive overeating, loss of control eating. And people think, oh, I have bad willpower. Oh, I can't stay on a diet. Oh, what's wrong with me? And really, it's our genetics are actually working both for us and against us in a lot of ways and causing us to binge. When we restrict, our bodies think they're starving. Our bodies are smart, but, you know, they haven't caught on that we're like actually around food supplies and food sources and we can have food whenever we want it. And so our brains are wired to think if we're restricting, our bodies need to hold on to the weight we have and the fat that we have in our system. And our bodies also tell us, well, next time you're around food, you better bring it all in, shovel it all in, because you might not have it again. So there's such a reason why dieting and weight loss and binging go hand in hand. And it's not our faults. It's biology. It's chemistry. It's genetics. And so many people, half of the people who are just trying to lose weight are really struggling with an actual eating disorder underneath. And there are lots of components to actually address besides just, oh, I need to lose some weight. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But just a few more things about our kids. And these are some of the most alarming statistics of all, I think. But 42% of first through third graders want to be thinner. And 81% of 10-year-olds are afraid of being fat. We talked about it earlier. This kind of all comes together. So I sort of have it in like a cascading shock value statistic here. But 46% of 9 to 11-year-olds are sometimes or very often on diets. And 82% of their families are sometimes or very often on diets. And, you know, what did we say earlier? Multi-billion dollar industry and a 98% fail rate. So, right, like, why are we on diets? There's so many other better ways we can teach health and balanced living to our kids and to ourselves. About half of adolescent girls engage in crash dieting, fasting, self-induced vomiting, diet pills, or laxatives. And overweight girls are more likely than normal weight girls to engage in these kinds of behaviors. And then the thing that's really alarming, and this is why I always joke, like, meet me at a dinner party, and it gets awkward real fast, because they're like, oh, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, well, let me tell you. Put on the soup spoon, everyone gets a little uncomfortable, make some kind of joke, right? But really, you know, I really do feel like I have this sort of soapbox to stand on about diets, because they make us feel like we're the failure, and we're not. We are not the failure. The industry is the failure. We're being taught the wrong things. And so 35% of normal dieters progress into pathological dieters, which means dieting all the time. And then 25% of those dieters progress into full-blown eating disorders. So diets really can kind of be the trigger and the gateway into disordered eating. And it's really because there's no one cause. There's this great phrase that says genetics loads the gun and environment pulls the trigger. Basically, you can be predisposed to having an eating disorder just like you can for alcoholism or any kinds of addiction. Your genetics really loads the gun. And if your environment pulls the trigger, if there's trauma, if there's change, if someone makes a comment about your weight, if you know, you go on a diet. There are tons of things in our environment that can actually trigger disordered eating. But genetically, we're kind of wired a certain way. And then our environment will kind of bring it out or not. And there's some really interesting studies about this, but really, you know, there's lots of things that we can say. And with parenting, you know, parents do not cause eating disorders, but our environment certainly contributes. And so there are lots of things going into our daily lives, and what our kids see us saying about ourselves, hear us saying about ourselves, see us doing, you know, they're sponges. Isn't it alarming how, like, I have a niece and a nephew that are 6 and 3, and it is like, so funny how they just take on what you're doing, right? They mimic you. They use the same words you do. My nephew's new thing is the word epic, because my brother-in-law says the word epic a lot, you know? And I'm like, you're sick.